Accession number 28708, reel 3.
The smoke came from then, from days and days and days and days. And no matter almost where you were, you could look and you could see the big black thing in the sky. I can't really remember. I remember VE Day
Well, tell me about that.
Well, the announcement came. Well, I was working. I'd left school by this time, and I was working in the co-op wages office. And how could we have found out that? But I know it was in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were told the war had come to an end, and that was, you know, the euphoria. It was wonderful. It didn't feel quite so excited when the Japanese war ended, although there were still loads of British ships out there and men in prisoner of war camps, of course, but we weren't obviously quite as connected as that. I can't.
1945.
Yeah, I was just thinking after the Normandy invasions. I can't really remember much about that. It was just boring, you know, the incredible monotony of boring food, boring clothes, boring life. It was. Boring.
And so in VE Day, was there dancing in the evenings, or I suppose?
Not that particular. I don't remember that. Not in Plymouth. It wasn't. Maybe in London, everyone came out. But I don't remember that. But probably within a few days, everyone had street parties all over the town. There were street parties. How they managed to have anything to eat with a street party, I don't know. Because I remember I went to a wedding on the April the 4th, 1948. I remember the date in particular because I went to London to a course at the British Museum Library, and on the 4th, on the Sunday, and this was on the Saturday, and a school friend that I had known for years, she got married, and she had a beautiful bouncing baby boy, you know, by August, which apparently he was a 5 months child. I've never heard of a 5 months child since, but even then, she came from a family of farmers, of North Devon farmers, and I'd seen such a spread of food. So even by 1948, and me and my friend, we tucked in, God, look at it, hams and creams and all sorts of things, trifles that we hadn't seen ever since we were little children. So this is 1948, so imagine it was very, 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 very boring. Of course, we had relatives in America who used to send us parcels sometimes, and we had this big round thing once. It was like a big round cheese, and we couldn't decide what it was. So we cut a piece off, and my grandmother ate it, and she said, "'Tis soap." But, we, you know, it was... It was like a big round yellow thing. And my aunt, this is when I said about my aunt over at Kim, the Catholics. She none of us took sugar, and my aunt used to save her sugar up. By the end of the war, and certainly by the time sugar came off rationing, she had a whole sideboard that was filled with sugar, and it was like blocks of cement. It was absolutely solid. You could build a house with it. In fact, sugar was such a precious thing, and my cousin had been in the army in India, and he came back home, and then up the street was an old girlfriend of his, but her husband was a merchant navy captain, and he was a lot of time away, and my aunt would say to my cousin, "Peter, I'm a bit short of sugar, you better go up and see Jean." So Peter would go up and see Jean on a Sunday afternoon. He'd stay there for about 3 hours, and then he'd come home with a 2-pound bag of sugar. And he'd have to go through this every 2 weeks.
Against his will.
Nah, I don't think it was against his will, but you know.
Well, I think, Mary, what do you think? Is there anything that we haven't covered?
I'm afraid I can't think of anything. It was all a long time ago. I can't really... I think if I hadn't sort of moved around, if my mother hadn't died, if I'd stayed in one place, but because there was, you know, I was there then, and I was there. I can't really remember sort of what happened when.
And I was just thinking of the aftermath of war in 46 and 47, people coming back. Is there any images that you remember strongly of that?
I remember Michael Foot's wife made a film called The Way We Live, and the people of Plymouth sort of had a march along Old Town Street. Just pulled it all down now to make Aldis, but they all marched along there. And I am in that crowd. I've never actually managed to spot myself in it. But my cousin of mine, Patsy Scantlebury, she changed her name to Drake, and she became a starlet with the J. Arthur Rank place at the same time as Diana Dawes and David Tomlinson. And she took the main part in this film that Michael Foot's wife made. Now that must have been about 46. I think it came out, it was the accompanying film. It was John Wayne's Red River, and I think it was the accompanying, like the little film that accompanied the John Wayne.
And it was kind of social documentary, wasn't it?
It was, yes. And then it shows all dancing on the hoe. And there used to be a lot of dancing on the hoe. And, of course, if anyone couldn't get a man in Plymouth, they wouldn't get one anywhere, because it was one thing Plymouth had. It was men of all shapes, sizes and colours. It's wonderful.
Okay.
But what I did find was extraordinary, how American men seem to have so little taste in women, sort of quite nice, respectable-looking, perhaps chiefs and POs, they'd be out with the most horrendous-looking prostitutes. I mean, prostitute-looking prostitutes. They're really horrific-looking women. I mean, there are plenty of prostitutes in Plymouth, obviously, but being a service port. But the Americans seem to make do with like 50-year-old slappers. Oh, horrible, horrible, horrible. I think you used to follow the fleet around, you know, those sort of women. But real, like something out of Dickens or Drake or something like that. Horrible living creatures.
I mean, you said earlier that there was this part of Plymouth that, you know, people were as alien to you as foreigners.
Yes.
How would you have realised that? Because they were dressed so poorly, or the way they spoke? Or how would you know that they were of a totally different social class, or that they came from that sort of those areas?
Well, my mother was a snob, and she brought me up to be that. And you may have noticed I brought my children up to be the same. And I also worked in the library with there's classification, you see. So I've always divvied people up physically, sexually, psychologically, etc. So I've always been a sort of divvying people, but.
But, say, as a 10 or 11-year-old schoolgirl, I mean, you were conscious of this big social divide.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Because we lived in my mother was a Protestant and married my father, who was a Catholic, against her father, who was a big Freemason's will, and she didn't speak to her father for 12 years. So she married beneath her. And then my father came from Devonport, which wasn't our sort of people, you see. Although they were very much of the working classes, but it was like lace curtain, respectable. And I always felt that, though I said I was an adopted child, but I always felt we were the Protestants of St. Budo and they were the Catholics of Devonport. And though I later went to live with them, and I was a Catholic myself, and I always had a sneer at my nose at them. And funnily enough, I found on our I didn't know I was adopted until our VE Day party. And I was looking for something, and I put it in this piece of paper, and it's a form of adoption. Do you know, I had absolutely no idea. And my first thought was, I'm not one of you. But of course, I realised that I was even more Irish than... I didn't really think I was Irish at all, though my father's mother was Irish. But so I would have thought of myself as a quarter coming from my father's mother. But, you know, with my real mother's name is Bridget Murphy, so there's not much. Although my grandmother always said she thought my mother's name was Murphy, my father's Cahoon. So she was 50% right, only there's no father's name I don't have a father. But
And how did you regard your adoptive father then, when you realised that thing on VE Day was just...
Oh no, I didn't associate him with them, but he was just dad, you know, but that hot shower.
Okay, I mean, just the last thing. I mean, you said that prostitutes and prostitution, were you conscious, you were obviously conscious of that as a child, that they were loose?
Oh, yeah, well, when we went to Notre Dame, you see, we had to go through Union Street to get to the railway station.
Union Street was the...
And Union Street was the prostitutes' street. And we always had to have a hat and gloves on. And apparently, if you had a hat and gloves on, no man would approach you. But if you took your hat off... And didn't have your gloves on, well, who knows what would happen to you then. So that was always... And my friend and I once took our hats off and we were eating an apple in the street. And we had to go before the headmistress, and like Dreyfus in that film, is it Chacuse or something? When Dreyfus gets stripped of all of his insignia so as no one should think he's a member of the French army. So we had our hat badges and our house had different coloured girdles for the house and our school ties removed for a week so that no one would know we came from Notre Dame. You see, I've had a scarlet life, haven't I?
But I mean, it was really that loose, even at that time of the day, say, going home at 4 o'clock, they would have been... I mean, could you identify the girls walking along who
were
in business?
Well, I could personally... I mean, I, you know, we were... As children, we were pure. We didn't know anything about any... In fact, someone said to me once, MP. And I didn't know what MP meant. They said, monthly period. And then later on, I discovered what monthly period meant. Now, monthly period was as close to dirt and muck and sex than I got for a very long time. I was quite old. I must have been about 14 when I realised that all our teachers, later, not trying to be various, twos living together, two females living together. And I suddenly realised that two women living together didn't have children. And I felt that there's got to be a connection, something between a man and a woman and two women. So, I remember the Pakistan Navy came to take over an old British destroyer or something, and they renamed it the Tipu Sultan. And, you know, Tipu Sultan's famous man. He was in the Marathas Wars in India. And anyway, they came to take Tipu Sultan. And by this time, the Americans had left, so the Pakistanis, which was a very new nation by this time, it's just after a partition, and they moved into the camp at St. Budo. Well, because they heard that Union Street was the place to go for scarlet women, they didn't realise that not all women were scarlet who were there, because in their society, no decent woman would ever have appeared on a street like that anyway. So they were approaching just ordinary women, and there was a lot of trouble over that, you see, that... That put the Pakistanis in a bad light because they were trying to tap up your housewife.
And that was in the 60s, I suppose.
Oh, no, this is 1948.
Oh, 48. Yeah, oh, sorry, yes,
yeah.
48.
Yeah, so it must have been about the first ship that Pakistan ever bought as a country, because partition was in, 47?
47.
47,
right.
Yeah. Well,
of course.
This is about 48, yes.
Gosh, right. Well, I think, Mary, that's great. Anything more that you made a list there that you haven't talked over? I can't pause it a bit.
I can't really think of anything.
Hang on. Okay.
Oh, I'm got me. No,